Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
The question is, do I have a God complex?
Dr. Kessler says yes.
Which makes me wonder if this lawyer has any idea as to the kind of grades one has to receive in college to be accepted at a top medical school. If you have the vaguest clue as to how talented someone has to be to lead a surgical team. I have an MD from Harvard. I am board certified in cardiothoracic medicine and trauma surgery. I have been awarded citations from 7 different medical boards in New England. And I am never, ever sick at sea. So I ask you, when someone goes into that chapel and they fall on their knees and they pray to God that their wife doesn't miscarry, or that their daughter doesn't bleed to death, or that their mother doesn't suffer acute neural trauma from post-operative shock, who do you think they're praying to? Now, you go ahead and read your Bible, Dennis, and you go to your church, and with any luck, you might win the annual raffle, but if you're looking for God, he was in operating room number 2 on November 17th, and he doesn't like to be second-guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
Features that have outlasted the movies that created them for 1,000. It is 17 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of August, in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. This, my friends, is the Rick Emerson radio program, an excursion into whimsicalities your feeble earth mind cannot even conceive. And yet, it will be your pleasure to receive them. It's 503-505-6964. You should get with the calling, or the whatever. It's 503-505-6964. Oh, I actually got to sign in. Don't I? I do. All right, I'll get that down here in just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. Just a second. Just a moment. Whatever. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. It is Wednesday and so forth. Mr. Aaron Mesh of Willamette Week will be joining us today. It's entirely possible that's going to be in studio. It's equally possible that's going to be a thing he does via the telephone because, as he put it, it's funny that people don't call. We were just talking about bachelor parties yesterday on the show. Now, what is the difference, Don Taylor? Because you know things. You're a social person, more so than I am in some ways anyway, and you're not a caterer, but you've created food for social events and social gatherings. Hmm. What is an engagement party?
I believe an engagement party is a party that a couple throws to invite friends and family to celebrate their engagement.
Now, is that a thing that happens in addition to or in replacement of the bachelor and bachelorette party?
Oh, it's a completely separate thing. For one thing, your engagement is going to often happen a year or so before the wedding is going to occur.
So this isn't like some sort of
this is not a racy event usually.
Yes. But this is one of those things. This isn't like some sort of social C blocking done by the fiance to keep her man from having a bachelor party.
No.
Right?
No. Okay. No, this is just an engagement party is usually less raucous. But not necessarily. But honestly, I think it's an early bid to get your first wave of gifts.
All right. That's because some people can be convinced probably to double dip. You know, yeah. Well, we gave them something for the engagement party. Do we have to give something for the wedding? I don't know. Everybody else is going to give something for the wedding. What about Loretta? Will she be there? Yes, she always gives two things. We have to give two things as well. Let's go find out where they're registered. Bam.
Exactly.
That is the one thing, the only thing I really regret about the fact that, you know, Laura and I had a bit of a, not an ad hoc wedding, but I mean, it was a, you know, we've talked about this, but, you know, just like you and Patrick, we just sort of decided, like, we want to get married, and sure, you know, and then, like, a week later, we were standing on the, you know, it sounds like a hippie thing, we were standing on the beach, you know, because we were in San Diego anyway, and in fact, the single best photograph, the two best photographs of Laura and I's wedding are, well, the first one, I'm not even in, so that explains why it's great, because I'm not sullying up the, you know, I'm not stinking up the joint, but just, first of all, because it was before the hair transplant thing. And it's like I'm on the beach, and so there's the fine mist of you know, salt water spray in the air, which has the effect, doesn't matter how much hair you have, you get out of the shower or the pool or something, you know, it's matted to your head, and it's all, you know, this big sort of like, you know, scalp showing through. But, you know, of course, me, before I had the whole medical hair restoration thing, and I'm standing on the beach, and so it's just like acres and acres of pink gleaming scalp just everywhere. It's just horrid. So the two great photos of my wedding. One is just my wife, who looks radiant, and I'm nowhere to be seen. The second one is actually where the chick who was administering the whatever, who was running, who's, you know, do you take, and where's the ring, and whatever, you know, the you know, whatever, justice of the
okay,
thing.
The actual minister.
Yeah, I don't know if she was a minister. She was some chick. Yeah. She had a thing, and there's something hanging on her wall that said she could marry people and whatever. But there's me and Laura and this chick. And then I swear to God, there's like a guy with a surfboard just sort of walking through the middle of the service. Like, not that I don't even think he was trying to be rude. It was just sort of like a, well, you know, the waves are there and I'm here. And the fastest way from A to Z, I have to go hang 10, you guys. And so there's this great thing where it's like, and I think it is actually as I'm like getting the ring or whatever. And then there's a guy with a surfboard just sort of in mid stride, like halfway through our service. It's awesome.
You ever flipping through the channels on cable and you come across one of the local cable access channels and you see a very dignified-looking black man with kind of gray hair wearing a powdered blue turtleneck talking about philosophy?
I have seen that guy.
That's the guy that married Patrick and I.
Really?
Yeah, because he's a licensed humanist minister.
That's awesome. There are two guys that I love. Well, there's three guys I love in the cable access. There's him. There's this sort of he's like an elderly white guy. He's like maybe 85, and he just talks about like whatever's going on in his day. It wouldn't be interesting to play here, and it's not even interesting as such. It's sort of comforting because then I got up and I had an English muffin, and you know, sometimes with an English muffin, you know, it's not like a regular muffin. Not just because it's English, but it's, you know, it's sort of crisp inside. And then when you toast an English muffin, here's an interesting thing about it is the surface becomes sort of almost honeycombed because the outer edges, they seem to toast a lot faster. And so then it's sort of like a waffle, except the holes are kind of round and it's inside a muffin. I don't know if they're from England. They're called English muffins. Maybe that's just a thing people say. And if you're having a stressful day, you sit and watch that guy, and immediately you can just feel tension draining out of you, like you were receiving shiatsu. You just sort of sit on the couch, you go, ah. You know, he's sort of like Bob Ross, but he doesn't really have any point. He just sort of kind of talks about crap. And then the third guy, of course, is Louis Farrakhan, who's always on Sunday mornings.
I'm also fascinated by this one show I keep coming across on cable access that Patrick and I call Cooking with Hookers. And it's just some woman who has her own little homegrown cooking show on cable access, but she's always dressed really, like, inappropriately scantily.
Gaudily.
Just wearing, like, way too little clothing. And
cooking with cleavage.
Mini skirts and the dresses that have the cutouts.
Awesome.
So that they, like, you know, so... And I've never been able to figure out who she is or why she's doing what she's doing.
She probably is just some chick who dresses that way in her daily life. And then also, coincidentally, wants to do a cooking show.
Quite possibly.
And then just doesn't feel the need to dress up as something she's not, Don Taylor. She just has to... were you here... Did you live in Portland during the Jim Spag era?
Yes. Yeah. That was one of the first...
When
first
your introductions?
Bits of Portlandia that I was actually introduced to when I moved here. Just like, oh, I wonder... Because I did a cable access show in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm like, you're going, I wonder what they got on the cable access show here. Gah!
Yeah. It's a penis. And it's attached to a horrible, horrible homunculus of a man. Yeah. He was actually one of the first guys I ever interviewed when I was doing the show here, like in 98. I think right before he died, actually. Anyway, well, whatever. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thanks for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached. It's don@rickemerson.com. Coming up today, we have... Well, almost 1.5 installments of Greatest Songs Ever Made. So we have your regular Greatest Songs Ever Made, which I put together, and which we're going to get to later. Is the actual the full boat, as they say. So we'll get to that. And that one I sort of did for you, Don. it's not only for you, but I did as I was writing it out, because that's a thing. I'm not going to pretend all this crap just comes out of my head. I mean, it does, but then it goes on the page, and I edit it, and whatever. The Greatest Songs Ever Made, I mean, that's a thing that I write. It's an essay, and then I read it, and whatever. But as I was writing it last night, I thought of you. And there are different versions.
Especially considering how cranky and mean you were to me in the last hour. You were a little testy.
That's not true at all. You take that back, you whore. I was not. See, I didn't even sell that well as irony. No, I wasn't cranky at all. That was not, in no way was I cranky.
All right.
I take not offense at that, but I was that's surprising to me.
There was a little bit of chiding.
Oh, this isn't you saying this. This is other people's. This is the assembled. This is the peanut gallery saying this, and then you passing it along like their minion, like their puppet. How's it feel to dance like a little puppet for them, Don?
This is entirely my observation.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever you say. Well,
it's okay. I don't care because you did something nice. You thought of me when you didn't have to be thinking of me, and you created a. You thought of me while you were doing your little song bit.
My little song bit. Okay. You just sounded. You know what you sounded like just now? You sounded like Ned Beatty in Network. You get up there on your little 18-inch screen, and you howl about America and democracy. There is no America. All right, well, whatever. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. So today we have one and a half greatest songs made. So as I was writing the greatest songs ever last night, before I knew that I would receive excoriating scorn for doing so, I was thinking about you and wondering which version of the song to use, because there are multiple versions. There are at least three different versions of the song. And I didn't quite know which one, and then I finally decided. But anyway, so I was sort of taking you into consideration with that. And who knows, you might have picked a different version, but so we got that. There's also one that is a little ad hoc that we'll get to probably, I don't know, maybe in 15 or 20 minutes, just because it is somewhat related to today's news. So we'll get to that. That's sort of an unofficial. It's a little bit of an adjunct, almost like an outtake of Greatest Songs Ever. We have watches coming up today. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be here, and Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Wednesday.
A mom meets her baby for the first time with help of a robot. Thousands around the world stand up against bullying. And a homeless man is arrested after burning homes in Ashland, Oregon.
Thousands of people stand up against bullying? Really?
That's what it says.
Okay. Well, I guess I was going to ask you more about it, but I realized I've learned the thing. After like 12 years, I've learned finally that if I ask... A, I'm not going to get the answer because it's, you know, and even if I do get the answer, it ruins the setup for later on. So I'm not going to, I just trust that that will be made clear at some point.
It's like Christmas Eve. You have to just kind of live with the anticipation and hope that the payoff will be a bright, shiny bicycle.
Awesome. Let's see. And then some emails to get through as well. Let's see, real quickly. Let's see. Guy has a question about bartending. Somebody else has a question about reading material and listening material for a long road trip / vacation they're going to be taking. And then someone else thanks the Rick Emerson Show for solving a decades-long mystery in their lives.
Wow.
And I'm not making that last part up, by the way. That's completely true. Her name is Erica. I have it right here. Don't you wish you knew what the mystery was? You shall. Sooner than you might imagine. And this is all true. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Before we do anything else, I've mentioned a couple of things. First of all, don't forget this program is available on iTunes. You can get this show on iTunes later on in the day. I don't know why the music suddenly said, there we go, and it's back. That was the thing where the computer just decided to let me know that it was Boss for a second. This show is available on iTunes. It's also available, of course, in archived form. You can download it at rickemerson.com in the archive section, where you can also find a video, including the video I mentioned yesterday, me firing the belt-fed M60 into a swamp in the Tillamook Burn, which was awesome.
Oh, boy.
Any number of interviews that we've done over the years, all that stuff, it all just kind of piles up in the archives. And I always mention this at the end of the show, but I should mention it here at the top at least this once, because I think people are not always aware of it. So we do the show live. You know, we do Legion of News, noon to one. And then starting around, 1:15-ish, this show takes a year. And we're usually done around 3 or sometimes later, it depends. But when we're done with this live show, somebody said to me, I'm never around the computer. I'm working during the day, so I can't listen, to the stream. And this stream actually goes 24 hours a day. So we do it sort of Howard style. You know, it's kind of what he does with the satellite thing, where we do the show, and then as soon as we're done here at like 3 or 3:30 or whenever, we encore the day's Legion of News, followed by the encore of this show. And then it just loops over and over, basically, until the next show, until the next day. So if you are near a computer, or if you're using the mobile stream, you can listen basically any time, day or night. That's how much Rick Emerson cares about each and every one of you, singly, individually, and collectively, en masse as well, in toto, one might say. All right, and there you go. Well, this is where we normally talk about what we did last night. I didn't really do much of anything. Because I got home from the audition, about which we can talk here in a second.
Yeah.
I got home from the audition last night, and I just, I basically just sat there and stared at a wall and wondered if maybe consulting a thesaurus ahead of time that contained the words rugged and outdoorsy might help me to sell those things a little better in the future. So we'll talk about that here in just a second, because I've already got questions piling up an email about that. Dawn Taylor, your evening, how was it?
I had a big plan. I was going to go home. I was tired. I was going to take a nap. Then I was going to get up and spend the entire evening writing, because I had a lot of writing.
That never works out, though.
And what happened is I got home, and I actually started undressing and changing into more comfortable clothes for napping, my napping clothes.
I was going to ask if you had writing wear you put on.
Well, I do have... I think I dress more slightly more slovenly, which I know is hard to believe, but I dress slightly more slovenly around the house.
Did you just wrap yourself in newspapers?
Well, I do have this pair of sort of yoga-ish workout pants that just look like if you put like a giant circus clown in like a hobo's gym pants. They're just horrible. You don't ever want to see me in them, but they're really comfortable. So I'll put those on. And,
I'm going to come over sometime at like 9 o'clock and just knock on the door just so I can see you in those at some point.
Or I have a pair of black velour pajama pants
awesome.
That I will wear.
Do you ever answer the door in either of these things?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, if somebody comes to the door, you got to answer the door.
You don't just say, hold on a second, and then you just like put yourself in a garment bag or something?
Well, I worked at home for years. I learned a long time ago just not care what the UPS man thought of me,
right.
So anyway, I was like getting all undressed. I was going to get, I turned on a fan. I was going to get all nappy. I was all happy. And then my husband said, comes in and goes, I'm going to the bank. I'm like, okay, see ya. And he said, and he just stood there in the doorway. And I was like, what, do you need me to go to the bank with you? And he said, yes. And so I'm thinking, I don't know why, because I know he's just going to make a deposit.
Does the pinning the note to his sleeve thing not work anymore?
He can just sign the thing and put it in, because, we have a joint account, but he doesn't need me for anything. It turns out, why do you think he wanted me to go to the bank with him?
Because he figured he was going to have to stand in line for a long time, and he wanted someone to talk to.
Almost that good.
I got nothing.
Because he had to drive all the way to Vancouver in rush hour traffic and wanted to use the carpool lane.
Fantastic. That's excellent. And I would say legitimate. It's not like, I would imagine, when was this?
This is like 4:30. So, it's to get to Vancouver.
Oh, no, you don't, why, okay, maybe I missed this. Why in Vancouver? You live in Tennisport.
When we met, obviously, separate lives, separate bank accounts. He used to live in Vancouver, and he's been with this credit union in Vancouver since he was like 20 years old.
Right, but it's a credit union. Don't they have multiple locations?
No, they only in Vancouver.
Wow.
Only in like Washington. So we lived in North Portland, so it was just like right across the bridge, and so it really wasn't a problem. And then we moved to Tualatin, and now he gets his paychecks are direct deposited, so we don't really have to go to the bank very often.
No real pressing reason to change it,
And so it's just like, we just keep putting it off because it's just such a huge pain in the ass to change banks.
And so now you're driving to Vancouver at 4:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I'm riding along.
How long did it take you to get it from Tualatin? Which, by the way, Tualatin to here is like 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes.
How long did it take you to get to Vancouver?
40.
That sucks.
And that wasn't bad. It would have probably been another half hour more if we hadn't used the HOV lane.
More than that. More than that. Let me just tell you this. A couple of times when I was doing the KUFO gig, for some goddamn reason, two things. I don't know if I mentioned this on the air or off the air, but it doesn't really matter because I'm going to say it again. So everybody pretend that this is shiny and new. I was kvetching to somebody about this, and I think I don't want to get up into a thing, but I would say that I've been... would you agree that I've been fairly graceful when recapping the KUFO period of this show's life?
Considering the things you could say and some of the things I've heard you say off the air.
Considering the things, because Rick Emerson is a professional, and Rick Emerson knows that one does not wash one's laundry in public all the time. It's not like we've been shy about taking an axe to some of the companies that have fired us or whatever in the past. And in fact, you know, we've said, even when we were at CBS, we would occasionally say things that were perhaps a bit uncharitable. But there's just, you know, first of all, because, the KUFO version of the show is not just me. If I say something, it's almost like I'm putting Greg and Sarah and Tim, as they say on Homicide, in the jackpot with me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speak for those guys if they're not here to say it themselves. So, you know, so Rick Emerson is, he rises above it. He chooses the right, as our Latter-day Saint friends say. So I try to be very sort of taciturn about all of that. The two things that really do bug me, though. One is that of all the goddamn years in the history of the mother effing world that they would have gotten rid of Rockfest, it was like the one year that I was there working at KUFO. And it's not like I even really care about Rockfest that much. But it's kind of a cool thing. It's a big deal. It was one of the bigger shows happening in Portland every year. And, I'm not going to lie. Kind of a cool thing to get on stage. Be like, hey, welcome to Rockfest. 100,000 people. Look at me right now. I mean, that is kind of a cool experience to have. I've done the thing of you being backstage or just offstage at Rockfest and seeing, like, you know, however many thousand people. It's kind of a cool deal. So they have, like, Rockfest 1, 2, 3, 4, 9, 12. The year that Rick Emerson works at KUFO, none. It's Rockfest 0. Rockfest nada is what they had. So instead, Tim Riley went and introduced, like, Shinedown in Tannisbourne because it was five blocks from his house or something. And I was out of town. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Shinedown. And then he left. And then, of course, this year, Rockfest back.
Yeah.
And bigger than ever, they claim. So,
and doing ads for it on TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's that's the
Ricker
one thing. The second thing about which I'm a little annoyed and has to do with this is that every concert that we were involved with, and this is a minor complaint, this is a complaint that most people would love to have. I always reference my nephew who, you know, cut off his thumb in a box-making factory. So, you know, his life is worse. But, you know, we would do all these shows, but they were always in Vancouver. They were always at the Clark County Amphitheater. And the thing is, we always had to be there at 5:25 p.m. on a Tuesday or whatever. And I swear to Christ, it would take 2 hours to get there. I mean, it would... When I went to Crewfest, Crewfest 2, I guess, we went out there. I left my home, and that was the day that it was 117 degrees, I think, on the ground, first of all. It took me 2 hours and 5 minutes to get all the way to there and then the snaking line of traffic and then to find the parking space and then to get to the actual venue where KUFO staff were supposed to go. 2 hours it took me. And again, that was the hottest day of 2009. That was during that whole hotpocalypse thing it was going on. So I'm just saying, I know the high occupancy, the carpool lane, though, is one of God's greatest inventions. That's why every now and again, they'll bust somebody in Vancouver who has, like, a mannequin that they've, or in Vancouver, or in Seattle, I mean. Seattle seems to be, this problem is rampant. They'll bust somebody who has, like, a dummy or, like, a blow-up doll or some crap. In Seattle, actually, about a year and a half ago, and this is another thing, it's in the news about every 5 years in a different city. Some chick who was like 7 months pregnant was using the carpool lane, and then she said, quite fairly, I might add, that the law says it's a person, so up yours. up yours, the law. She's like, hey, it's a person. You can't kill it. I get to ride with it. That's the thing, right? I mean, that's the deal. That's the line of demarcation. Once you can't kill something, it's a person. And so, therefore, it counts as a person in the carpool lane, whatever anybody else says.
Well, last night I was my husband's carpool mannequin.
That's great.
Which, of course, meant I didn't get my nap, which meant that by the time we got home, I was just, like, really cranky and bitchy, and I had all this work to do. And I've had a headache for, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
I had a headache yesterday. So I was just like, and he's going, so go ahead. I guess I'll do some dishes. You can get all your work done now. And I'm like,
no, it's too late because
the ship has sailed. I can't do this now.
Here's the other thing. And because you and I are here, because we're adults, and because it's just you and I, and there's no one listening, we can say this because no one will ever hear these words leaving our mouths. The other thing is that you secretly wish that you had not had to go because it would have taken him longer to get there and back, and it would have given you a more alone time to sleep and work. He would have been gone for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no shame in saying that.
Yeah.
Just because you love somebody. You know, if you love somebody, let them go. Set them free, if only for 2 hours.
Yeah, because you've got the thing where Laura works these sort of odd hours.
Yes,
sometimes.
She does.
I now am back. This is something I loved about freelance writing and working at home. I was alone all day.
Yeah.
And it's like now, it's like I get up in the morning, I got a couple hours, I'm by myself after he goes to work, and I'm sitting there noodling on the computer, getting news together, that sort of thing. Then I come here and I get a little bit of time, usually quiet here, and then I'm in this room with you for several hours. Then I get in the car and I go home. Then I'm in an apartment with my husband for the rest of the
night. There's no escape.
It's like I'm never by myself. So
I will say this, the thing about that, and I love my wife, but I'm also a bit of a solitary man in some ways. I'm a man who enjoys his own company, and I like, you know, some solitude. I'm basically just a sort of real life Henry Bemis reading in the bank vault during lunch. I mean, that's kind of my deal. The great thing about Lara's schedule is she works 12-hour days, but only, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. And those 12-hour days are either 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., which means I got the whole morning when I get up by myself. And then I get done here, go home, couple hours by myself. And then she gets home around 7:30. We have dinner, whatever. She either works 7 to 7 or she works noon to midnight. And that's that. I mean, and that's like where I get up. We have like an hour, hour and a half in the morning, whatever. She goes to work. I get home. I got like 7 hours before she gets home. And then she has like 3 or 4 days where she's off and home all the time. So we're with each other all the time. And then just around the point where we're getting sick of each other, then she's back to work. So it really just works out splendidly. So I feel your pain. I really do. I will say this.
I have my I have my Thursday nights when he goes off and has his geek boy time with his gaming buddies.
His gaming friends.
And that says, go, have fun, enjoy. And he's gone from like 6 until midnight.
And it's not
like, so like I get like all of this time by myself.
Isn't it like a rotating game? It happens at your house occasionally. It's at a comic store or something.
No,
or
it's at a guy's house. It's at a guy's house in Southeast Portland because that's central to everyone. So
final question. Actually, when you're using the high occupancy lane, the carpool lane, do you do that thing of just like occasionally using it to cut forward and then you duck back into the real, like if you're not supposed to be using it, you use it as a passing lane, hoping that the man won't spot you and you can leapfrog ahead about 200 yards?
I don't.
I do that, and I feel like a dick, but I do it anyway.
No, that's a very dick thing to do.
I know, but I mean, it's like, but it just, that is a temptation I cannot, it's just there, and it's just like wide open, and there's no one using it.
Yeah, I just can't.
Here's the thing, is the carpool, I'd like to have a math guy, not today, I'd like to have a math guy sort of analyze this, though, and talk, because the carpool lane seems like it causes more problems than it solves, because no one's using it, and so all you're doing is you're making a third more congestion in the two existing lanes.
Yes. It's supposed to encourage people to carpool.
Right,
it doesn't.
Yeah, it's deeper. It's more insidious and invidious than that, Don Taylor. The carpool lane is even worse because not only do they try to encourage people to use it and they don't, it only works because people don't use it.
Yeah.
In other words, if everybody carpooled, all the lanes would be equally clogged and there would be no point. The carpool lane is only effective because it's ineffective. It's like a weird Lewis Carroll thing. I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. So I can't think about it because it turns my brain inside out. Anyway, speaking of traffic, and I'll talk about my edition, and then we'll get to the news. We got 1.5 installments of Greatest Songs Ever Made coming up today. Do we have watch? We have a double Geek Watch coming up. I got to find the second half of that.
And a Corpse Watch.
Corpse Watch, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. It's a very exciting program. So speaking of traffic, so I did that thing yesterday because they schedule all my auditions at 4. because we get down here around 3 o'clock, and 4 is like the latest they can push it. I mean, because, you know, auditions are like everything. Auditions are like this show. They take it as read that it's going to run about 25 minutes behind. And, they, you know, people want to get home at a reasonable hour. So they schedule the last audition for like 4:15, figuring that guy will get in there at like 5, maybe. And then ready to be home by like 6. So my auditions are always scheduled at like 4:10 because the agent knows. I told him, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to get, I can't get out of here till like 3:30, you know, and it's like 25 minutes for me to get there. And so they schedule them at like 4:10. And those were always the days where it's like I'm running late or it's like the card and stuff. Did you take my sunglasses home by chance?
No, I don't think,
all
no.
Right. So here's the thing. So yesterday, here's why I asked. Because
so.
Yesterday, I had this audition, and we talked about the ludicrous nature of this, where I was supposed to go in and look rugged and outdoorsy. There was no actual dialogue involved. They sent me any copy or any script or anything. It was like, just be prepared to, quote, look rugged and outdoorsy. And that's not a thing I can really do. I don't really know how one looks rugged and outdoorsy. But you saw me yesterday getting ready, right?
Yeah.
So we're standing in the kitchen after the show. I basically got on my standard, you know, my low-rent Hank Moody costume, which is just like the jeans and the black T-shirt. And I put on some boots. That was my concession. And I took off my glittery bracelets that make me feel pretty. Oh, so pretty. So I took those off. And then the last thing I did, I put in my contact lenses, because real men don't wear spectacles.
And you were going to put them in there in the kitchen, and then I went, ah, and I looked away, and then you decided that you would go do it in the bathroom.
You can't watch a guy sticking a thing in his eye, which
right.
I get. So, you put in my contact lenses, and it's that thing, it almost sounds like a parody of a thing that a guy would talk about at the beginning of a talk radio program, where I took my sunglasses out and I set them on the table, went and I put in my contact lenses, I came out, and they were gone. Gone from this place. And the only conclusion, and it was that George Carlin thing of, you know, they were just here. I mean,
wow, maybe I did pick them up.
I don't mean to sound accusatory about it, but it's like there's no one here. I mean, there's me, you, Greg, and Sarah, and they were in here with the door shut doing their show. There was literally, I don't mean figuratively, I mean, there was literally no one else here. Those are my sunglasses.
Are they? Well, then.
No, wait. Those are not my sunglasses.
Those are not your
sunglasses. But those look astonishingly similar to my sunglasses. Well, it doesn't matter. Unless you actually have them, in which case it matters a great deal.
I do have them.
You have my goddamn sunglasses, you woman.
Look how close these look to each other, though.
But didn't you notice at some point that you had two pairs of sunglasses with you?
No, because when I reached in, I pulled out mine. I didn't realize
I very
were
nearly called you on the phone going, do you have my... Did you just left? Come back because you have my sunglasses.
They look very similar.
It looks just like Skinny and Sweet. All right.
Give me those back.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know who was sorry? Rick Emerson was sorry yesterday when you don't wear contacts, so you don't know what this is like. But if you don't wear contacts, people who wear contacts, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't wear contacts for a long time, and I wear them every month or so for like, you know, a day or something, when you put them in, it takes your eyes about an hour to adjust to them because the prescription, it's a different kind of adjustment to your eyesight. And so yesterday, I put in my contact lenses, and so it takes, you know, like, again, about 45 minutes before you can really see all that well. Plus, I'm late, so I'm having to speed my way to the audition. I made even later because I can't find my sunglasses, and I realize I'm going to be in my contact lenses, making my vision wonky to begin with, and then driving directly into the sun. Right into the sun as I try to get to the casting house. And so what do?
So if you don't get this part, it's my fault.
I spend 10 minutes doing that idiotic retracing your steps thing in the bathroom. And then, you know, and then every this year, you find out, maybe they fell into the toilet. They didn't fall into the toilet, but you've looked all the logical. Maybe they're in the microwave. They're not in the microwave. Maybe they're underneath this Billy D. Williams Colt 45 bottle. No. And then, for good measure, incidentally, I was trying to see if they'd somehow fallen into the garbage disposal, which involved leaning over, which meant that I cracked my head on the edge of the microwave, so I had a huge welt when I went into the audition. Maybe that made me look rugged or just foolish. So, anyway, so I get to the audition, and, you know, I walk in, and we're all standing there. And the audition is, I won't say who it's for, but it's for it's for something like, I'll say it's for a chainsaw. Not for a chainsaw, but it's for a product like that. You know, sort of manly, you're building something, you're constructing things, rugged, masculine type of product. And it's a television commercial, and the casting woman comes out, and she speaks to all of us, and she says, okay, so now today for your audition, we're going to do something a little bit different. Today, we're going to have you come in, and we're going to have you tell us a story from your real life about the last time you used a chainsaw. And again, not a chainsaw, similar to a chainsaw. And then, it, you know, and then she says, okay, and Bob, you're first, and then Rick. And so then you realize you basically got like 2 minutes to try to figure out some story from your own life that involves a chainsaw, you know, and then go in there and then tell the story. You know, and so, and then I've got a hair in my eye underneath one of my contact lenses. And there's nothing more masculine, by the way, than sitting there going, pardon me, I've got to adjust a contact lens. Do you have any saline? So I go into the audition room and the door shuts. And then then there's a camera pointed at me. And I have one of these, I have a sort of tick, maybe not even a tick. I have a thing that I do. And I know that I do this, and I know that it bothers some people, but that's just going to have to be okay, because I'm me and they're them, and everybody else is less important. When I am speaking to someone or to rooms of people, I know that I do this thing where I occasionally just stare into the middle distance like at no one. Like, I will talk to a blank spot in the middle of the table where I won't make eye contact. And it's not like I'm trying to be shifty about it. It's just the way my brain works, and it always has. And it's not like I'm afraid of making eye contact with people or that I can't speak to crowds. I'm not afraid of speaking in front of groups or whatever. But I sometimes will just not make eye contact if I'm telling a story or if someone asks me something and I have a long, complex answer I'm giving. Like if it's you and you ask me something, I'll just like stare at the center of the table and do that. So, you know, so I'm staring at, the floor, telling this story about a chainsaw, realizing it's not going all that well. And then I got the hair underneath my contact lens again. It's a long way of saying, I don't know that I'm going to get a call back for this audition. All of which is less weird than this last weekend. And I'll tell this part in like 30 seconds or less. When I went to an audition this last weekend for, I remember what it was for now. But I walk in and it turns out it's a hand modeling job that also involves like your face being on camera real quickly. But it's basically just your hands. And so I swear to you, I walk in and there's a miniature blue screen. It's like the size of like, I don't know. It's like the size of maybe a television screen. And you're just putting your hands there, up against it, above an index card that has your name, like every which way, while they get in there with the world's largest telephoto lens, taking these like electron microscope scans, it seems like, of my hands. And then you're just noticing how filthy your hands are most of the time. Because you're in an office and you're handling pens and you're eating and they're handling money and they're on the steering wheel of your car. And then I'm just realizing my hands are just covered with like a black, just like a black speckly stain that I'm hoping is ink of some kind. And then there was a listener there who was also auditioning for something. Noticed me scrubbing my hands furiously in the bathroom, probably thinks I'm crazy. Good thing he's wrong. Mm. All right. Here's some news with Dawn Taylor, kids. It's the Rick Emerson radio program.
And now, from the news desk. This is Dawn Taylor.
A pregnant woman who collapsed with heart troubles at a Newburgh hospital nearly died, but she and her baby were pulled through at separate hospitals. While with her child still at a different hospital, Yvonne Cortez saw her baby for the first time Tuesday with the help of a robot. And I found a picture of this robot on the computer so I can show it to you.
Fantastic.
She went to Providence Medical Center in Newburgh because she was not feeling well. Turned out her heart, while she was there, stopped beating. The doctors rushed to stabilize her, delivered her baby, whose heart had also stopped. The baby was rushed to the intensive care unit at St. Vincent Medical Center, which is about 20 miles away. And while they were both able to, the doctors saved Ms. Cortez and her son. After a recovery period, they were introduced for the first time via the telestroke computer.
Now, you keep saying that we had this story last hour. You were talking about the telestroke computer. And I'm not really sure what that means.
It is essentially a robot, and they use it for medical care. If a doctor cannot be in the room,
is it one of those things where he can operate long distance, like he can do like heart surgery from Australia?
It's really
or something?
Just more for communication. If the doctor, or in this case, I'm guessing the baby, is on the
I've
computer.
Seen one of those things, yeah.
And
no,
then there's
I've
this thing that looks like a robot, and then the screen is where its head would be.
You know what it looks like? It looks like a laptop screen above. A place your order here thing at a drive-thru. Yeah. You know, like a little round speaker with a button on it. All right, that's
but
fantastic.
Apparently they used this so that the woman could see her baby while she was
Science.
In the hospital.
Excellent. Science. That's wonderful. Hey, this, by the way, reminds me, I'm going to print out this second half of the Geek Watch because we got this. We got a two-part Geek Watch today, and part of it has to do with Futurama and robots and Bender, who is just... You want to talk about... I'm just going to deviate for just 1 second before we even get to the Geek Watch, which is going to be here in a bit. I remember when Futurama first hit the airwaves, I was sort of afeard that it was going to be just like a bad Simpsons knockoff. And I think that largely has to do with the style of drawing that Matt Groening does. And I think I unfairly for some reason in my head, I thought, well, the characters are drawn the same way. It's going to be the same kind of humor, which is the sort of American Dad, Family Guy, you know, yeah. Cleveland, where everything is sort of the same. But, you know, the character of Bender is just one of the most fascinating and, I would say, subtly complex characters on television. Because you think that he's just a series of attributes and cliches, and he's really not, because you can – if that were true, he would not continue to be funny. Just the way that Homer Simpson continues to be very layered in ways that you don't always anticipate or expect. The character of Bender is just – wonderfully done. I mean, all the characters in Futurama are exceptionally well drawn. Some, I guess, more so than others. It's not. I don't really know that that Hermes has all that many levels to him, but that's only because they don't spend as much time on him as a primary character. See also Zoidberg. But man, whatever was going on in Groening's head when he came up with the Bender character, I mean, it's like we need more of that in this world because it's a fine thing. It really is. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
We are so far behind schedule.
It doesn't matter because Greg and Sarah taped this morning. We could stay here until 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I guess we can't.
No, we really can't.
Because somebody has to go do ham-fisted radio at pdx.fm, which is more important than this program. It's fine. All right.
Experimental surgery meets the internet age as doctors performed a double hand transplant while documenting it on Twitter. Officials with Jewish Hospital and the University of Louisville in Kentucky said surgeons from the Jewish Hospital Hand Care Center and from Kleinert Cuts and Associates began the procedure around 7 p.m. Tuesday. The surgery was completed early this afternoon. Dr. Christina Savido updated the progress of the surgery real-time using the Twitter website. Savido was not an active participant in the operation and focused on explaining the surgery. Lead surgeon Dr. Warren Breidenbach said the patient's family was excited to follow the surgery online instead of through occasional updates from hospital staff. He said they wanted others to follow the surgery to understand how hand transplants work. Hospital leaders said the broadcast was a way to show the world how the latest transplants work and to take some of the mystery out of the procedure.
That's the sort of thing that I guess I should make a snarky comment about, but I mean, I'm not going to, because that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
It's sort of like when, and I don't know if they do this via Twitter now or via text or whatever, but I years ago I was bitching that that airports, you know, if you've made a plane reservation, they already have your contact info. So it seems like they ought to be able to text you and tell you if a plane's going to be late or something. And then sure enough, like 6 months later, they started doing it, where you would get like a text message. You'd be like, oh, Delta Airlines is texting me. Oh, they're running 5 minutes behind. And so now I guess they can do that via Twitter, which is sort of awesome as well. It's like how you can go to, well, I guess like Alaska has it, but I think maybe most airlines do, where you can actually see like the little map with the icon of the plane as it goes ding, 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 and like and you can actually see it moving as it edges its way ever homeward. So it's a glorious time to be alive.
One of the pizza deliveries, I think it might be Pizza Hut, I'm not sure.
You can track it online.
Yeah, where it says, Jim is making your pizza right now.
I know that I sometimes get wrapped up in the minutiae of life or whatever, and then I get overworked about certain things. How can you not love America? I'm not talking to you, Don Taylor.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in general. How could anyone look at a country that creates a technology simply to know how far away your pizza is?
Everyone's pointing out in the text box. Everyone suddenly pops in to tell me it's Domino's. Domino's, idiot. It's Domino's.
But the fact that they all know that,
yeah,
that is proof that it's a fantastic application of science. And I'm not being snarky or ironic when I say that. Because, God damn it, if I order a pizza, I want to know when it's going to be there. Because it's like if you put a beer in the fridge or the freezer or something, or maybe you're going to duck out to the store, buy yourself maybe some chocolate peanut butter Bugles to go with that pizza. You got to know when the pizza's going to be there. 10 years ago, the wealthiest man in Babylon 100 years ago couldn't have done that. And now you can do it for almost nothing.
And if you did, you could actually track that like on your BlackBerry since it's on the internet. Oh. So you could like look at your BlackBerry and go, I think I have enough time to go to Plaid Pantry. And you could walk down the street and keep an eye on like how soon your pizza will
Seriously,
be there.
I'm saying this right now. The past sucks. The past sucks. The huge one. There's nothing about the past that is better than now. The present is better than the past. The future will be better than the present. And that is a fact. That is a stone-cold, irrefutable, undeniable, indisputable fact.
Well, then let's use that as our segue to do our Geek Watch.
You're goddamn right we're going to use it as the segue into our Geek Watch. All right, let's see. This is your Geek Watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Yeah. There we go.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
There is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch that is, like all parts of the Rick Emerson radio program, brought to you by folks such as The Cleaning Solution and the person of Michael Beatty. We'll talk more about him in just a bit. The Cleaning Solution, one of the proud sponsors here of the Rick Emerson radio program. This is your Geek Watch for Wednesday.
Well, this is part one of our Geek Watch. Apple has been accused of creating traitorware for trying to patent security software that tracks down people who jailbreak their iPhones and iPads and locks them out of their devices. Jailbreaking allows users to access software and features for the devices that have not been sanctioned by Apple. The process was declared legitimate by a U.S. court earlier this month, but Apple said any such interference in their device will void its warranty. Apple's patent, which went before the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office earlier this week, is for systems and methods for identifying unauthorized users of an electronic device. Using the software, Apple can remotely access your sensitive information and data, ostensibly to determine if you are an authorized user.
Wait a minute. Let's back up for a second. Is this a thing they say exists, or does this exist?
This is something that Apple has created and has applied for a patent.
Okay. So it either exists or, in other words, it either exists in a usable state or they have created the plans or the designs for it and they are patenting it right now. But it doesn't – I mean, I hate to point out the obvious, and I'm not saying that anybody disagrees with me, but it seems like you're not an unauthorized user if it's illegal. If jailbreaking your phone is legal, I have no idea who this is.
Probably Aaron Mesh.
Yeah, but it's from some bizarre area code. Oh, I'm just filled with fear right now. Should I answer this?
You should.
Hello, Rick Emerson radio program. Is this the party to whom I'm speaking? Hello. Yes, going five times. Let me try this again. Hello, hi, Rick Emerson radio program.
Hello.
Hello, hi. Hello, Aaron Mesh. How are you on this Wednesday?
I'm doing very well, Rick. How are you?
I'm fine. Let me ask you this. What is it with this bizarre area code from which you're calling?
Oh, this is my Tennessee number.
Really? Are you not in Tennessee now, are you? Are you from Tennessee?
I'm from all over. I'm originally from Miami, moved to Tennessee, then moved here. But sometimes I like to jump in my magical pickup truck and fly to Tennessee.
Well, all right then. All right. So here's the thing.
At the moment, though, Rick. No, I'm not in Tennessee. I just never bothered to change my number.
Here's two things you got to know. One, we're running way behind today. Two, we're still very excited to talk to you, and we're going to do that momentarily. 2.1. We're going to be finishing this story about Apple Computer, and then we will engage in banter with you, I'm sure, of an informative and witty nature about all that's coming up in the world of Willamette Week. So do you mind? I'm going to stick you on hold for like 60 seconds, or you can listen to the story about Apple Computer and comment on it thereafter. Which would you prefer?
I want to hear the story.
Awesome. All right, I was hoping you'd say that. All right. So thus far on the story, Apple has applied for a patent on software, Don, that would allow them to sniff out whether or not you're an unauthorized user of your iPhone, by which they mean jailbreaking, and then deactivate your phone. But here's the thing I don't understand. If the court says that jailbreaking is legal, which they did, then you are not an unauthorized user.
Well, all I'm saying is that using the software, Apple can remotely access your information and data, ostensibly to determine if you are authorized. Among the information they can access, the system can take a flashless, undetectable photo of the user's face with the iPhone 4's front-facing camera and multiple photos of the surrounding location. It can also record the user's voice, regardless of whether they are making a phone call, monitor their internet usage, and record the heartbeat and vibration signature of the user.
Please tell me that you're not making this up, because if it turns out you're making this up, I'm going to be so sad.
I am not making this up.
This is the best story I've ever heard in my life.
According to the patent application, if these identifiers do not match the authorized user, the system then determines that there is suspicious behavior.
And it kills you.
Suspicious behavior, the application, comprises one or more of hacking the electronic device, jailbreaking the electronic device, unlocking the electronic device, removing a SIM card from the electronic device, and moving at least a predetermined distance away from a synced device. If Apple decides all this adds up to unauthorized use, they will remotely lock or shut down the offending iPhone or iPad, making it unusable.
Did you just call it the iPhone? Was that a Freudian slip?
That might have been a...
Here's why this story is great. I'm not saying they ought to do this, but I'm saying I've always suspected that they had the ability to do so and that they've had the ability to do so for a long time. So I'm just glad it's sort of... people say, well, you're going to lose your privacy online. There is no privacy online. There is no privacy to lose. One need only lose the illusion that you ever had privacy online. So I am actually, and I mean this with all honesty, I am in favor of things like this, if only because I suspected it's going to happen one way or the other, and at least this way you're sort of aware of it. There's also a sort of sister technology to this. I have there's a thing on my laptop that was actually was given to me as a gift. Our good friend Seamus actually gifted me this. I have a piece of software on my laptop that will actually track it if it's stolen. If it's stolen, I go online and I enter a whole thing, and it actually starts taking pictures, and sending a GPS signal of like, help, I'm here, and here's the hooligan who has stolen me. So this technology has existed in Apple products for quite some time. It shouldn't come as a huge shock that Steve Jobs has got some huge, Dr. No device that he can, activate in his office that just, that samples like the alkaline content of your skin and then determines whether or not you're a lying louse.
Well, the Electronic Frontier Foundation has called the patent, quote, downright creepy and invasive, and to say that, you should be aware that it could be used to retaliate against you if you jailbreak or tinker with your device in ways that Apple views as unauthorized, even though they're perfectly legal.
Can I just tell you this? And I'm not trying to start a whole thing here. And again, when I say lying louse, I'm not saying that I'm using that sort of in a colloquial. I'm using that for the purposes of comedic hyperbole. Because, again, jailbreaking, perfectly. And let me just say for the record, before a bunch of fanboys start, sending me a bunch of Apple crap, I think that once you buy something, you ought to be able to use it however you want. Doesn't matter. If you want to buy your iPhone just to bludgeon a guy, I don't care. Whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. You use your iPhone for anything. Once you purchase something, in my opinion, it is yours and you can do whatever you want with it. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong or illegal or immoral about that. I do want to say this one thing, though, that, Sarah Dillon, for a long time, Sarah has a G4, she has an iBook, and it has this sort of camera built into the top, just like I have right here, and this little pinhole camera built into the shell of her laptop. And she put electrical tape over that, like 2 years ago. And our good friend Thomas Gill said, what's with the electrical tape on your laptop? And she's like, it's the webcam, I don't want it looking at me. She's like, I don't want it to go on. And he said, that you're crazy. And I think he actually just said, you're crazy, in those words. And she said, she goes, I don't know, but it just... I don't like the idea that it could be on, and I don't know that it's on, and so I'm gonna get rid of that by covering it up. And so there's a huge piece of black tape over her web. And he said, well, it's actually, it's impossible for a webcam to go on without the indicator light also going on. It's impossible according to that. And maybe it is impossible with the G4. I'm just saying. This will only further inflame all of the Sarah folk who are there jamming, corks, into everything in their home because they think, Carl Weathers is spying at them through a series of tubes. So it's just a strange time. We have through the second half of this at some other point. Let me close this out and then we'll speak with Mr. Aaron Mesh.
Actually, before you close this out, I did have a question from the text box. And
yeah.
I guess not everyone understands what jailbreaking is. And essentially that's hacking into your device so that you can use applications from other makers that aren't expressly authorized by Apple.
It's sort of like, imagine this. Imagine if you were to take I was going to make a VHS Betamax reference. I guess it's the only way I can really do it. Imagine if you had if you were one of those guys who bought an HD DVD player 2 years ago, but then suddenly you're screwed and everybody's using Blu-ray and you get all these HD DVDs and other play them on. It'd be like if you hacked into your Blu-ray player so it could play HD DVDs or something, or if you hacked into your Betamax so it could play VHS. And you'd say, well, it belongs to me. I can do whatever I want. If only you were Steve Jobs. So Apple believes that once you purchase something, and they're not alone in this, that they still get to tell you what you can use it for and what you can't, which in my opinion is that's what most philosophers would call a big load, is what that is. All right, that was your Geek Watch.
By Grapthar's hammer.
By the sons of Warvan.
I shall avenge you.
Next.
Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Don Taylor, strangely enough, one of our fine local publications, Willamette Week, which is our alternative weekly paper, as I think I'm legally required to call it, they ran an article just recently, a cover story actually, about the open source movement, and it was written by a well-scrubbed young lad named Aaron Mesh. And I wonder what Aaron Mesh would have to say about this whole Apple story if he were here.
Well, golly.
My God.
It says Aaron Mesh.
It's like you can hear me. Let me ask you this. In your experience, what are the open source guys, before we talk about the new issue, what are the open source guys say about Apple as compared to what they say about Microsoft? Did you ever get into that? Do you have any idea?
You know, it's funny. I did get into that a little bit. And to be honest, I think for a lot of the open sourcers, Apple is irrelevant. They've always been PC users.
And
they're
so,
not as excited about Apple.
And that's because the open source guys are guys who probably like to build it themselves. They like to go home with a rubber band and a Popular Mechanics magazine and build the computer. And with Apple, you buy it and it's all put together. And they don't like that.
Right. And I think there's something about that that, you know, I'm scrambling for a good metaphor, but there isn't one. They like to build it themselves. They like to do it in their own backyard. And Apple has made everything custom, you know, perfectly set to go. It's pretty, and I think they'd note that, but that's about it.
Before we talk about this this issue, now, you were not in the studio today because I know you had a bit of a night last night. You said, and I've already said this like 15 times today, so if it's something I wasn't supposed to reveal, that ship has sailed and gone to the Grey Havens. You were at an engagement party last night. How is that? Is that like a couple's bachelor party, or is it something different altogether?
Oh, just mostly just an excuse to drink. A friend of mine got engaged, and so we had some beers to celebrate.
All right, then. What is in the new issue of Willamette Week? What bits of edification are you bringing the people, Aaron Mesh?
Oh, a variety of deliciousness. We have a profile of a pig at the Oregon State Fair.
I'm sorry, I missed part of what you said. I heard profile, and then I heard pig.
Yeah, you did. A profile of the giant pig at the Oregon State Fair.
When you say a profile of a giant pig, I don't mean to be deliberately obtuse, but what do you mean? I mean, when you say a giant pig, pigs are large creatures. What are we talking about when we say giant?
He's 6 feet long and 3,000 pounds.
Jesus God.
Holy mackerel.
That's, okay.
That's 9 Justin Biebers.
Why is the on the Bieber scale? It is so. Does it belong to just like an individual farmer, or is that like a Monsanto pig or something? What is up with that?
It's a Holstein. It's a Yorkshire. It's a Yorkshire pig, and they travel him about the country, mostly California and Florida, but sometimes they come up to Oregon and Washington, showing off a giant pig. Apparently, there's a fee.
Do you have to? I was going to ask. They travel around showing him, but usually there's some, you know, for the purposes of ellipsis. Is this just for the purposes of charging people to come look at a 3,000-pound pig?
I think that's the case, and I'm sorry, I apologize. I got it wrong. He's actually 1,000 pounds, so really not impressive at all.
That's still half a ton, though. I mean, that's the 6 feet long thing is sort of weirding me out there. Have you seen the pig in question, sir?
I have not seen the pig, except in photographs, of which there is a lovely one in today's paper.
All right, so that is so you can read about that. What else is going on in the New Willamette Week?
We've got a nice piece on frozen yogurt, which apparently is back.
Did it go away?
More about it. You know, in a lot of ways, frozen yogurt never really left.
Yeah, that's one of those things that it's sort of like people drinking bottled seltzer. It's one of those things that it kind of flared up for a moment, and then it just sort of existed, at a lower level for the next 20 years.
But apparently there is a new DIY movement in frozen yogurt, which apparently there's a DIY movement in everything in Portland, so it's comforting to know.
Is this like where people are just, well, I guess I could assume they're making it at home. It's sort of like a home-brewed frozen yogurt. This sounds retarded even to say it out loud. So it's just like a making your own frozen yogurt at the house kind of thing.
It would seem to be more of a put your own toppings on it kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't really think that counts as DIY. I think that's like saying that if I open the beer and pour it into a glass that I have somehow done it myself at home. I think that's misconstruing the phrase.
Unless this is special artisan craft
yogurt. Yeah, that seems to be sort of the implication. I'm going to be honest with you that I'm just looking over this story right now because I don't care about frozen yogurt.
Good for you. Well done. I was having to feign a sort of interest there.
Yeah, we were all pretending to care.
We were all doing it. We were all trying to pretend like we cared about this conversation.
No,
God, it was getting depressing.
Tell me more. Speak forever about it.
What kind of toppings? Are there sprinkles?
I got to say, actually, that I went to a barbecue last weekend, and there were two desserts there. Well, there were three. They were my chocolate peanut butter bugles. And then there was some you shut your mouth. And then there was this homemade apple pie a friend of ours made, and then another woman had made some homemade frozen yogurt, and it was actually homemade frozen mint yogurt with chocolate chips. And I can tell you, it was like one of the best things I've ever had in my life. It was unbelievable. So I'm not opposed to frozen yogurt. It's not like I have some sort of dogmatic opposition to it or whatever. So
you know what I actually want to talk about, though?
Go ahead.
Which we've never talked about on your show. We've never talked about movies.
That's true.
I think we talked about movies through a proxy. I think Kelly Clark relayed your feelings about Scott Pilgrim to us, and that's sort of the extent of it. So,
did she do an interpretation?
Yeah, she did a little. She did a little dance.
We had her put on a big fake mustache.
Are you?
there it is.
Are you wanting to talk about movies today, or just in general? Is this sort of a note for next time?
It could be a note for next time. It's fine either way. It's just I think at some point I should come into the studio and talk to you about movies, and then Dawn and I can argue.
Well, here's the thing. The studio's right here, and we're doing the program. And if somebody, I think, hadn't gotten so blind drunk last night at an engagement party, that could be happening right now. So that person might be said to be hoist by their own petard in this case. So
many lost opportunities to drink.
Well, I'll tell you what. Next time you're in, send us a reminder email about that because it'll just fall out of my brain like it's just going through a sewer grate. So remind me about this, and we will set aside time to have a movie discussion with you the next time you're in the studio, sir.
That sounds great. I think we got to do a summer movie roundup and discuss what we liked and what we didn't like.
And we can do that.
And you want to try to design one aspect of it just to annoy Dawn.
I will find at least one movie I know Dawn loves, and I will
just rail on it. Hold it down and give it what for. All right, fantastic. The new issue is on stands, and you can also read it online at WWeek.com. Mr. Aaron Mesh, who hails from Tennessee. Thank you, my friend. Have a fantastic day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That's Aaron Mesh. Awesome. All right. What a strange person he is. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean he's just kind of an interesting guy, you know? He fits
in Portland fairly well here, considering that, you know, he came here from Tennessee. His last job was in Tennessee, and then he came here.
He's just, he's marching to the beat of his, I think, several different drummers, sort of all at once internally. Let's talk a bit about the cleaning solution and the person of Michael Beatty. The cleaning solution, of course, is one of our fine business partners and sponsors here at the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 971-533-3211, and I don't know if I should identify. Well, I will identify. A friend of ours and a business that we know who took advantage of the cleaning solution in the and Michael Beatty's service just this week.
Wait, who could that be?
That would be our friend Aaron Duran, who works at Things from Another World.
Oh.
Things from Another World, whatever you're into, they have just the thing for your collection, tfaw.com. Things from Another World, they're going to be doing this commercial shoot because they air, they advertise on the CW, on Northwest 32, Cable Channel 3, which is where I, Rick Emerson, can be seen doing Outlook Portland. But they have these... I don't even know if I should say this. I won't give anything about it away. Many people have seen the commercial they do, and it's like I'm in it for like 5 seconds or, half a second. I'm not even doing it. I'm just standing there. And yet everybody seems to have seen it. So this is a commercial where I'm standing there with like an Arkham Asylum thing, and just, sucking in my gut or whatever. And they're getting ready to film another commercial at Things from Another World, which I think maybe today. You have no idea. It is like as done by Cecil B. DeMille. It's unreal. I've seen the there are storyboards for it. 3 pages of them. There are, I swear to God, and there's CG. There's like effects, and there are 3 pages of storyboards for this new ad for Things from Another World that has not, I think it's filming either today or tomorrow. So I get this text from Aaron Duran. He's like, ASAP, you gotta clean the carpet. They're gonna be here filming the store. The floor is disgusting. Cleaning solution. What's his number? And this is yesterday on my way to the audition. I text him back and I say, why? The number for the cleaning solution is 971-533-3211. That number again is 971-533-3211, Aaron Duran, because as you know, the cleaning solution, they not only do residential cleaning, no, they'll do commercial cleaning, cleaning of your office space, cleaning of your workplace. So, for example, if there's going to be a 3-page storyboard's worth of entertainment commercial filmed at a place like Things from Another World, you want to make sure that the place doesn't look all filthy.
And you want to get the gamer funk out of the carpet before the professional commercial people.
And I'm glad you said that, because I didn't want to make that distinction and say that there's regular dirt and then there's geek dirt. And, you know, it's just pounds of Cheeto dust and sadness. Just get ground into there, you know? With some guy finds that his, like, 12th level mage was overwhelmed by a 4th level paladin and some sort of melee assault he didn't anticipate. You know, and then he just sits there and just weeps sad tears of geek sorrow into the carpet. And that never comes out. I mean, it just stays there forever. Unless you call the cleaning solution. Michael Beatty, 971-533-3211. Residential and commercial cleaning of your carpet, stone, marble tile, anything your feet might touch. The cleaning solution. Wasn't that flawless?
That was beautiful.
It was smooth, like a smooth thing. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I'm going to read the second part of the Geek Watch now,
right.
Since
awesome.
We never closed that out. A writer for Futurama created a brand new math theorem based on group theory to explain a plot twist in the show. This is going well beyond the Call of Duty.
And there may be, I haven't read the story all the way through. This is from Gizmodo, I think. And I've seen the episode. I didn't have time to read this version of the story. There may be some spoilers in this, but I got to tell you, it doesn't even matter because it's not like there's a clip. There are no real spoilers. I mean, there's plot description, basically. There's no spoilers as such.
Yeah, I don't think there's any real spoilers in this. Ken Keeler, the Futurama writer behind the theorem, actually has a PhD in math, so it's probably just a walk in the park. But for the rest of the non-math geniuses, his theorem was used to explain a problem with an invention that let characters switch bodies. In the show, you can only switch bodies once with the same pair of people, so they needed an equation to prove that with enough switching bodies around, everyone will eventually end up as who they really are. Keeler's theory would mathematically put everybody in the right place so that they could all be right in the Futurama world. Without Keeler's work, Bender's brain might have ended up in Amy's body forever.
And I think the theorem actually says, what it says is that no matter, the professor has this invention, you put two people, you've seen this in a million sci-fi things, put two people in the chairs, you press the button, zzz, their consciousness changes place. This is like, my brain and Don's body and vice versa. And handily enough, for the purposes of tracking the plot, the voices also seem to go along with the brain. So Amy's mouth opens and like Zoidberg's voice or whatever comes out. But his whole thing proves that no matter how many people are affected by this. So if you have 500 people who all switch brains with each other, that you never require more than two additional people to then get everybody back to the way they were. If no two people can go through the machine in the same combination more than once. So there are 500 people. You only need 502 people to be able to switch everybody back. And he was like, well, is that true? Hold on. Let me jot something down. Oh, my God. It's a theorem. And he created and then proved this new math theorem. And then he got the sense that he just sort of hung up on the wall with like all the other, like the million other things that he did, like the perpetual motion machine he created that day or something. So there you go. And it really is just, it's a fantastic episode. Do you want to know who's in the worst sex scene ever?
Yes, please.
All right. So the worst sex scene ever, it happens in the middle of a crowded restaurant, and they build up to it in such a horrible way. And it's Professor Farnsworth and Zoidberg. And they lead up to it by having Zoidberg do all those, like, he has all those weird things. Like, he'll have, like, he has, like, those weird tentacles that come out from his armpit sometimes. And he has, like, the weird, like, spiny fin thing. And then he has, it's not like the tongue parasite, but he has, like, a little, like, leech parasite that lives in his mouth. And they demonstrate in every conceivable way, like, how revolting he is. And then it's, like, he and Professor Farnsworth have sex. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And not in like a Family Guy way. Not there's anything wrong with that, but it really is quite something. And you get the sense that it was something that like no one ever thought they would do on that show. And that when he heard you feel like probably the other writers on Futurama just went, oh God, no, you're not. No, you can't. The seventh seal. And then suddenly the sky was as sackcloth. All right, there's your Geek Watch.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. We have closed this because I...
Yeah, we have, but I wasn't done.
Cheeseburgers are a
dangerous mix.
It doesn't matter.
We'll do this. It's delightful.
All right. Anyway, all right, well, we should take a break here.
Okay.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. We'll do greatest songs ever made here in just one moment, and we'll do the sort of official version of greatest songs ever made. And if we have time, we'll get to the sort of the second half of that, because I did a bit of an ad hoc follow-up to that, and you know, we'll see if we can get to that later on in the program. Still to come today, we have another watch of some kind, don't we? Dawn Taylor.
We do. We have a corpse watch.
So we have a corpse watch coming up, and there's just a whole pile of other things. And then also, I was being snarky about it earlier, so I would make it very clear that that was meant in a sort of a sarcastic and loving fashion. Ham-fisted radio coming up today, 4 o'clock at PDX.FM, hosted by Dawn Taylor, along with your underhost in that case, Mr. Bobby Roberts. What is on today's program?
We have a gentleman known as the. See, you're just putting me in this position where I can't say this word again.
A-hole.
The cooking a-hole.
Just say a-hole.
I feel stupid saying a-hole because, you know, the actual word isn't that bad. But anyway, he has a website called Cooking for A-holes, only the actual word,
right.
.com. And he is quite hilarious. As mentioned before, Anthony Bourdain recently, in an interview, they asked him what food blogs he read. And he said, I read this and this and this. Oh, and I love that cooking a-hole guy. So he's quite hilarious, and he's going to be on Ham-Fisted Radio today at 4. So if you can't listen to it live, you can download it at hamfistradio.com.
So pdx.fm live today at 4 o'clock, and then you can download this or past episodes of the show at Ham-Fisted Radio, all one word, hamfistedradio.com. All right. So now, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we have this, and I put together somewhat for Dawn Taylor, but you know, also for the greater good of the music-loving world. It's time for another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. Once upon a time, there were albums. I don't mean albums in the colloquial sense of the word, or maybe I do. Frankly, it gets a little hard to tell what language means or meant. But for our purposes here today, we're discussing a complete set of songs. An album, created or at least released as a single collection, meant to be, at least on occasion, heard back to back to back to back, all the way through, a singular sonic statement. So then, the question becomes from the creator, in what order do these songs go? How do they flow from one into another? What song closes the album? And, even more importantly, what song begins the album? What song is the album's opening statement, its declaration of purpose? There is, in fact, an entire art to such decisions. Many bands and record labels now employ sequencing consultants, whose sole job is to determine how to order the tracks on the record. For some bands and some songs, however, it's much simpler. The song itself tells you where it needs to be. The song announces its place in the grand order of things. Such a song is the focus of our conversation now. Written in 1977, it was released as the lead-off track for a 10-song collection that made stars out of its creators. It helped to make even bigger stars out of them a year later, when it opened the live album, for which they are still most famous. And again, a year after that, when the same live album conquered North America. Most recently, in 2008, a version of the song helped introduce another clutch of compositions when it served as the soundtrack for the trailer to Rock Band 2. Like all the best album openers, it speaks to every audience, everywhere. To every kid in every front row, every burnout, dirtbag, prom queen, quarterback, misfit, metalhead, stoner, or freak. Every pair of headphones and every car stereo in the land. Asking them a question that only seems corny to people who don't really matter anyway. Are you ready to rock? One of the greatest songs ever made. This is Cheap Trick and Hello There on the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A homeless man was arrested Wednesday and faces charges of starting a wind-whipped wildfire that destroyed 11 homes outside an Oregon college town. John Theory, 40, was arrested at 3 a.m. this morning under a freeway overpass and charged with 11 counts of reckless endangerment and 11 counts of reckless birding. Ashland Police Detective Sergeant Jim Alderman said other people at the homeless camp alongside Interstate 5, just outside the city limits, saw Theory running from the initial fire. The fire immediately burned an abandoned barn where homeless people sleep at night, and the embers blew across the freeway, touching off a blaze that raced through a subdivision. The fire in the outskirts of Ashland, a town of about 21,000 people, best known as home to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, ignited a string of homes one after the other, setting off explosions Tuesday afternoon. Cindy Walker, a neighborhood resident, said, "It was just an inferno. Black smoke, RVs, things blowing up, gas tanks, tires,
Jesus.
Propane tanks. I don't know. It sounded like bombs going off, like tornadoes of black smoke coming out of garages and backyards." Three other houses were damaged and homes along four streets in the 1970s era neighborhood were evacuated. The flames were finally controlled around dusk and no injuries were reported. Officials were tallying the damage today and looking for the cause of the blaze, which burned less than 20 acres.
Jesus, you know, the thing about the abandoned barn is that, first of all, if you drive through, you know, the Oregon countryside, you just see it seems like about 70% of barns are abandoned. And I'm not complaining about that because here's the thing. Here's a truism about barns, Dawn. And you never thought I'm the only person, by the way, on planet Earth of 6 billion people to use that phrase today. Here's a truism about barns. I am not. Now there's two of us. You said it. We're the only two people today on Earth to have said that. I know this in my heart. Here's something that's true about barns. And it's true of barns and Chuck Taylors. What is it?
I don't know.
That they both look better when they've been used and scuffed up a bit. You know, thinking of a brand new barn, hey, you know, it just doesn't look right somehow.
No.
A barn that is sort of, you know, where the paint's kind of faded or it's kind of peely or maybe it's just, or if it's just like 100 years old and it's just been sitting there in disrepair, I mean, it just looks fantastic. If the paint is completely sort of bleached off and whatever. But so I think that is part of the reason why abandoned barns don't ever get knocked down. Because people find them sort of strangely romantic, and so then they just sit around waiting to, like, go up in some conflagration somewhere, which sucks. And also the idea of it going from home to home, setting off a series of explosions, is one of those things that you somehow convince yourself can't really ever happen because it happens so often in the movies, it couldn't ever really take place in real life. You know, where you, like, you look at a guy's car or an igloo or something and it blows up.
Yeah, when you think about people having, like, you know, natural gas and propane tanks and
hot
such
water
like
heaters, yeah.
And I had emailed you the link to the story so that you could post the fellow's picture to the internet because he is a fine looking man.
I will, Jesus, wow.
He looks like Fisher Stevens on a bender.
That's a good one. I was also going to say, you know, who he looks like. He looks like what is that on SNL? There's the G.E. Smith and the Saturday Night Live band.
Yeah.
Who's that Amish looking guy?
I don't know.
You know who I'm talking.
Yes,
everybody
I
knows
do.
Him. He's the guy that looks Amish in the G.E. Smith Saturday Night Live band. He looks like that guy if you locked him in a shed filled with weasels for like 6 months and didn't really feed him ever. That's who he appears to be. All right, I'm gonna post a link to this right now. I'll do this at the Facebook. All right, here's by the way, can we just have a little acknowledgement of how great that Greatest Songs Ever?
That was great.
It was. And I'm not
God,
saying
I love Cheap Trick.
And that's really not so much about me. That's all about the song. And the other thing is that song's a minute 41, I won't play the whole thing again, but that's just, it's only a minute 41. It's even shorter than that, really. It's only a minute 41 because of this little thing where you hear, I believe it's Rick Nielsen shouting something in the background. He goes, yeah, I think. And then he runs his guitar pick over the strings twice. Let me see if I can just, right there. You hear the guitar pick and then you hear him go, yeah. And I mean, it's just, and then there's just that one little, that little riff that they grab onto at the beginning of that, which is barely even a riff. I mean, it's barely, it's like one note essentially. And, you know, and the thing is, I labored over which version of this to use too, because there's the version from In Color, which is that version, which I prefer, which the band themselves don't care for, but that's their problem, not mine. There's the version from Live at Budokan, which is great, which is, you know, because – and that's got the whole Kiss style. And Joey goes, will you please welcome epic recording artist Cheap Trick? And then they do the, you know, that. And then they re-recorded it themselves for Rock Band 2. And it's not very good, secretly. Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like Twisted Sister did with Stay Hungry, where they have been, which I think actually had the same producer now that I think about it, because they've said for years and years and years, Cheap Trick has said that the In Color album they don't like the way it sounds, that it's too slick and polished, and that it's supposed to sound more rockin'. You know, I want to go.
No, they're wrong.
You know, you're wrong. That's the thing where I want to. That's one of those Lucas things where you want to go, no. And we, the people, are stepping between you and the album, so you can't F with it. You know, it's just where they don't care. Well, it's like Iggy Pop. You know, the Stooges have, to this day, they say that they don't like the way the Raw Power album sounds. Iggy Pop's like, oh, the Raw Power album sounds like crap. I'm like, you can't speak anymore. Don't talk. Don't say anything else ever again, because I don't want to hear what comes out of your mouth next. So it's a great album. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Here's Don Taylor.
Hundreds rallied at the state capitol in Oklahoma on Tuesday evening to bring awareness to the issue of bullying. Upward Bound, a student group, organized the event in memory of an 11-year-old Perkins, Oklahoma boy who committed suicide in May after a long battle with a school bully. Ty Field's father, Kirk Smalley, was a guest speaker at the Stand for the Silent vigil and told the crowd to keep the message going into the new school year. Don't mourn our son, Smalley said. Use this energy to help us stop bullying. Stop this from happening to another child.
So what happened to the kid? What was the deal?
He had a lengthy encounter over and over for a long time with a bully, and he ended up killing himself.
Okay, all right. So there's the thing where it was like the we hear these stories about every 18 months, some kid that gets pushed and then kills themselves, yeah.
Smalley said he and his wife will step out of the spotlight and allow the group to continue doing their job. Upward Bound has created a Stand Up for the Silent Facebook page that has gained thousands of followers. Members are also selling T-shirts, armbands, and asking other students to sign an anti-bullying pledge.
You know, and just let me just say this from me to young people at schools everywhere. Because here's the thing. It sucks to be a kid all the time. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a kid as such, but it's just unpleasant because you got people running your life and you can't make your own decisions. And, you know, it's just crap, most of it, especially school and especially high school. Not that there aren't great moments there, but it's just like the great moments in high school. You know what it's like? It's like when you're a high school kid, it's like you're like a jewel thief who has to root around in his own waste for the diamonds he swallowed at the border. That's basically what it is. You know, hold on. I have to go to the bathroom and root around in my feces for those doubloons. You know, and you're always going to run into some dick, you know, that just decides he's going to feel good about himself by knocking at your teeth or whatever. And they will tell you, well, you should never fight a bully because that only, you know, that just lowers yourself to their. Well, those people are wrong, first of all. Now, it's always better to avoid it altogether if you can. So if you can just sort of make yourself scarce for 4 years, that's fine. And then you can someday become wealthy and buy his home and foreclose on it and turn him out into the street, which is what I would do if I were you. If it's unavoidable, though, like if the guy, you know, because sometimes you can just evade. Like, I don't know if you ever got bullied. Do girls get bullied in this sort of like pushed around, shoved, you know, punched way?
Most of it is psychological. But there was when I was junior high school, when I was in seventh grade, I started seventh grade, and there was this girl. She was like about 6 feet tall and had red hair. And for some reason, she just picked me out of a crowd and decided every single day when I was walking between classes, if she saw me in the hall, she would just walk over and punch me in the arm.
See, and it's...
I had no idea, and I don't know why she picked me, but it, you know...
Well, and the thing is, and I mean, I think it goes without saying, it's somebody who's so violent in high school, something clearly is wrong with them or their family or has been done to them. But, you know, but like, it's like, that's not your problem. That's their problem.
But boys and, you know, boys also bully girls with the added element of sexual harassment going along with it as well.
Yes, they do. Well, if you weren't dressed so haughtily, Dawn, that wouldn't happen. So, you know, if you can avoid those situations altogether, that really is the best of all possible worlds. Hang out in the library, because bullies are never ever going to be found in the library, like unless they're being punished for something. So if you want to, you know, remain unseen, you go to where books are. But you got some guy who's just like screwing with you all the time, just jacking you up, and you know, they'll say, you know, the whole thing of, well, if you stand up to him, you're just going to get a bit. And the thing is, he might actually punch you back if you stand up. But in my experience, that is one of those cliches that is sort of true, that if you do, and it's not like I was the guy who did it. I was the guy who vanished. I was the guy who just went and hung on the library. But I had friends of mine who just decided, like, well, I might get my, jaw wired shut after this, but, you know, I'll just take at least one swing and see what happens. And almost without exception, what would happen is the bully would pick on them. Whoever it was, some friend of mine would give like one punch back, and then the bully would like pound on them for a while. But then that was always the last pounding they got. I'm not saying it's always that way. So here's the other thing about that sucks about it now is because if you're a kid, they're so quick to expel anybody who just even hints at any kind of violence or any sort of retribution or any sort of, like you bring nail clippers to school and suddenly you're in the, suddenly you're in detention for like the next 9 months. So if I were a kid now and a bully was sort of like really physically harming me, I would actually just make some sort of public declaration where I just say, like, I abhor violence and I eschew physical resolutions, to all things. And I am saying so now publicly. However, as an American and as a human, I do believe that I am entitled to the right to defend myself physically, and I will do so if provoked. And then you just say that publicly, and then next time a guy gives you a guff, you just beat him with a 12 iron until he can't move anymore.
Well, the other thing that we all pretty much remember, the instances where we were bullied, and yet most of us managed to whitewash out of our own memories the instances when we were cruel to others ourselves.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when you're like an adolescent, when you're a child and an adolescent, there is a constant, just never-ending cycle of cruelty to others. You know, you've got some more popular kid who's giving you grief. You and your friends are walking home, and there's the kid who has, like, the orthopedic shoes, riding his bike by himself, and you throw something at him. And then it's like, so the thing is, I don't think we have a lot of young listeners to this show. But the thing is, no matter what age you are, just don't be a jerk to other people. Yeah, that's really the thing. Not to be a jerk to other people.
That didn't really work, though. Because jerks, by definition, are just going to hear that and go, what's she saying? I don't know, something about don't be a jerk. I don't know. F her.
Yeah, if you ever have that inkling, though, that maybe what I'm doing is cruel or not nice or could hurt somebody else's feelings, listen to that inkling. Don't justify it.
Are you secretly talking to me here, but you're trying to put it in the guise of young people?
In a global sense, to people, right. Just people everywhere in general. Just don't be a dick.
I suppose.
Duck out of traffic and drive like a quarter mile in the HOV lane and then duck back in just because you can.
Or go home with a guy's sunglasses,
That was an accident. I did not take your sunglasses on purpose.
I guess they do look similar to your sunglasses,
to be fair.
They look
very much as like.
I guess I have to acknowledge.
I had no idea.
Yesterday, like I said, you don't know this, you put in the contact lenses and it's like, for about 40 minutes, everything just looks a little cubist. And then I'm just staring, and I'm doing that thing of holding my hand up, driving into the sun, and I can't see green lights or red lights, and I'm just going like, I would hit a family of six, and then what are the addition? That would suck. All right. Let's see. We have another watch here, don't we?
We do.
All right. Let's do another watcher. We'll try to get caught up so we can get you out of here in time to do ham-fisted radio and so forth.
All right.
This is your
Corpse Watch
for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
I'm digging up bones, I'm digging up bones, exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here's Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
On Friday, 9 days after a mortuary service picked up Linda Walton's corpse from an apartment in Carrboro, North Carolina, police were called in to investigate a foul odor in downtown Graham, a small Alamance County town about 55 miles west of Raleigh. Investigators traced the pungent smell to a hearse owned by David B. Lawson Mortuary.
I hate the word pungent is one of those words I don't like to hear. I don't know why. It's like panties or something. It's one of those words that just has like that. This rings weird in my ear. pungent is a bad word.
But it's evocative of a specific sort of odor.
I suppose. I always think of, whenever I hear pungent, you know what I think of? I think of, in Catholic Church, that there's a big, like a... So actually, I guess it's like a miniature cauldron of incense that they swing around.
Yeah.
And that's what I always think of. I think of the sort of bitter-smelling incense in a Catholic church as having a pungent smell. Ugh.
Well, the odor was traced to a hearse owned by David B. Lawson Mortuary, the undertaker that picked up Walton's body on August 11th. Walton, 37, who investigators think died about a week before she was discovered, was still in the back of the undertaker's vehicle. The finds set off an investigation by police and the Alamance County District Attorney's Office. Their findings have sparked an inquiry by the North Carolina Board of Funeral Service, who is directly responsible for the administration and regulation of the funeral service profession.
Not so much incense as it is a decomposing body.
Yeah.
Okay.
Police do not suspect foul play in Walton's death, but investigators had not determined whether Lawson, the owner of the mortuary service that had her body, had run afoul of the law. Lawson, a licensed funeral director and embalmer in North Carolina for 34 years, did not respond to phone calls.
Go figure.
Comment. Lawson, over the past decade, the State Board of Funeral Service has investigated several complaints about Lawson, but they centered on problems with his failure to turn in timely annual reports about pre-need contracts through which people can make arrangements with funeral homes in advance of their deaths. Lawson was disciplined for his mistakes, according to the State Board records, and in 2008 surrendered his license that permitted him to enter into pre-need contracts. Captain Joel Booker of the Carrboro Police Department said Lawson's was called after investigators couldn't find Walton's next of kin. Police believe she had died of natural causes, so there would be no autopsy ordered by the state medical examiner. Lawson's, Booker said, was on a list of mortuaries that would pick up bodies. Carrboro investigators said when Lawson showed up at the apartment in Western Carrboro, investigators told the driver that they were having difficulty finding Walton's family. What the investigators told me is Lawson said, "Not a problem. We'll put her in the freezer," Booker said. So off they go, and that's the last we know of it until we heard from Graham Police last week.
Okay.
It's unclear whether Lawson's had a refrigerator unit for stored bodies, but...
It wasn't really being used in any event.
No. So anyway, so they had the body for 9 days in a hearse.
Done.
Unrefrigerated.
There we go. God almighty.
It was pungent.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
The mortuary guy had to peel off her panties.
Please.
While she was pungent.
Please don't do that. Stop it.
Her decomposing panties.
Just work the word moist into there somewhere.
Her decomposing panties.
That's the worst thing you've ever said. You've never said anything worse than that. Not even when you said, hey, watch this film about some kids who F a zombie. God damn. I hope you die. Just covered in weevils. All right. We'll do a thing. When we come back on the other side, I will read this email from someone who says the Rick Emerson Show solved a decades-old mystery in her life. We'll get a few of the stories and whatnot, and we get some business taken care of before Dawn Taylor heads off to do ham-fisted radio, figuratively, one assumes, and also literally at pdx.fm. That's at 4 o'clock with underhost Mr. Bobby Roberts, who's on the show with you today. So that's all just ahead on the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay right there. We continue after this. And by this, I mean this. It's a word from one of our brand new business partners, Castalia Language Center. And they're a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. And now, we were actually just, not to make light of it, we were just talking about the bullying thing in high school and whatever. And we mentioned this, I think, during Legion of News, that high school is just, it's just replete with distractions. It's like a distraction factory where every single thing there seems to be more pressing and more important and more imperative and urgent than whatever it is they're trying to teach you. However important the thing in class might actually be, like in a real-world sense, it's likely to not seem all that important in a sort of relative sense, which is why you meet people, and I mean you yourself may be this person, where you took two or three or like five semesters of French, and it's like you can't speak any of it at all. Or you took Spanish, which is, has a lot of the same structural underpinnings as many languages and, share some commonalities with English. And you'd think that you would retain a lot of it. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And it's because you're in the wrong environment. You're trying to learn it in a place that just isn't conducive to learning. And sadly, A lot of high schools are that way. Now you're an adult, you want to learn Spanish, and you want to be able to actually use it. Here's what you do. You go to PortlandSpanish.com. That's a website for Castalia Language Center, small private school in downtown Portland offering Spanish language classes for adults. And when I say classes, that means like you're going to be back in a lecture hall where you there's 200 people there or something, and a guy's got a, you know, a PowerPoint where he's trying to, you know, have you figure out how, you know, to use prepositions or something. These are small classes. It's 8 students, and it's a comfortable, relaxed environment. And, of course, because you got other adults there, first of all, everybody's sort of learning in the same way and at the same rate. And because it's a small class of 8 adults, it's all people who are there because they actually want to learn it, which means that everybody's moving forward and you're learning the language and you're learning how to actually use it, as opposed to just sort of understanding about the language but not being able to really make it work for you. Now, the owner of the school, her name is Clara Grebel, and she's actually from Argentina. She's a native Spanish speaker, and now she has opened the Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Please tell me you heard it on the Rick Emerson radio program, won't you please? That's PortlandSpanish.com, the Castalia Language Center.
Whoa! Darling, there we jump on the zip and the Ferris wheel. I can't explain how she makes me feel. I do not drink and I do not rob. I work all day at my summer job, cutting that grass for a dollar square to pay my way to the county fair. Oh my, tell me why the good times come and the good times die. Take me round again. I press my luck if I thought you would. All day long, baby, I don't care. I wait for you at the county fair. Oh, my, tell me why the good times come and the good times die. Take me around again and I'll meet you there at the county fair. Times die. Take me round again and I'll meet you there. Oh my, tell me why the good times come and the good times die. Take me round again and I'll meet you there at the county fair. Oh my, tell me why the good times come and the good times die.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Your hair is doing something really weird right now. All right, there you go. It's not that I care, but I figure you want to know.
Well, you know, what do you mean not that you care? You're the one who has to look at it.
No, I mean, it doesn't bother me, but I'm no, here's the thing I've learned with chicks is that if there's something, you know, like in their teeth or like if their hair is sticking straight up and you don't tell them, then they will inevitably catch sight of themselves in a mirror and they'll say, why didn't you tell me that I had, you know, and insert like perceived flaw or whatever, you know, the parsley in the teeth or like you get, you know, I got this
whole
thing.
There's always at least one of those things going on with me at any given time, though. There's like food on me or something stuck in my teeth or my hair standing straight. I am never like smooth and completely put together, just
have you,
ever.
Have you noticed this, that with every, it's not even about getting older, it's just that in different stages of your life, different things seem to always be wrong. For example, I, within just the last, I don't know, 8 months, I have this, like, cowlick in my hair, the back, like right here, sort of on the side, that never go away. It's like I have to just empty the entire tube of hair gel, you know, just to try to get this sort of Dennis the Menace thing to go down on the left side of my head. And it wasn't there, you know, probably won't be there a year from now. Wasn't there last year. It's just right now that I got a cowlick there for no reason. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah, you have these. That's one of the things about getting older. Once you hit about 30, every year there's something new. Like, you know, you look down and you go, wait a minute. There's hair growing out of my big toe. When did I get hair on the back of my big toe? That's horrifying.
Are you speaking?
No, I'm just speaking specifically. I had hairs sprouting out of the top of my big toe.
That's the worst thing.
Which was just horrible.
Sprouting.
Which is the thing is I'm not an especially hairy person. As a rule, I'm not one of those people that, you know, some people grow a lot of
suit.
No, I am not at all. And so, but it's like, so when you find hair growing someplace it wasn't growing before, you're just kind of like going, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember the first time I went to the barber and he was just like, you want me to get rid of all this ear hair? I'm like, what? The devil, you say. Because, like, how often do you look at inside your own ear? Probably never. And he didn't even use, like, a special tool. He just took, like, the big clipper thing and just stuck the corner of it in my ear, which I guess all the important working parts are like way inside your head, but it seemed dangerous at the time. You know, and then the nose hair thing and the Andy Rooney eyebrow thing. And
yeah,
it's just,
my husband is obsessed with that, with the concern where he noticed now that he's got like a couple of – he'll get a couple of hairs in the ear area or the nose area. And he actually asked me once. He's like, you know what I'd really like for Christmas? One of those little rotary clipper things that you get from the Sharper Image. I'm like, seriously? That's what you want for Christmas?
Here's the thing. No joke. I have from Con Air. I have a little personal grooming thing that in a couple – comes with like 50 zillion attachments that you don't really need. The only one you really need for this, but it's still a great value, is one that does – it's a nose hair trimmer and ear hair trimmer.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's like you can just use the same one. It's not like there's some sort of hygiene issue with that. But yeah, it trims ear hair, nose hair. And then occasionally, if you get like a stray eyebrow hair that you don't – like you can't – sometimes you have this, you try to yank it out and it just gets curly. This you can actually sort of –
Because my husband is unsure what he should do about his eyebrows now because he keeps – as he puts it, he says that he's on the track to have eyebrows like a crazy old Russian man.
Yeah.
Where does
he get his hair cut?
I don't know. Some,
just like a supercut place?
Just some barber. No, it's an actual barber.
But, you know, they'll do that if you ask them. I mean, that's a thing they know how to do. And it's not like they have to figure out how to do it. Like, that is a known – and I've actually found that most – if they have any sort of skill at all, and the guy that I go to, I've talked about this before, but the guy that I go to sometimes at least when I feel up to it, because it just takes forever and he talks forever, he's, you know, just an old school barber. But but even if you go to like Supercuts or Bishops or some crap, it's like they all know the deal where they get the clippers and they get the comb. And it's a thing I can never do myself because I'm terrified, because then you'll end up like Vanilla Ice. You just like shave up, you know, then you're like pink and you shaved off part of your eyebrows. But they'll know how to do that. They'll know exactly what he's talking about because they get guys who come in and ask them to do it, because they get, you know, guys of, you know, whatever. Maybe they're old and Russian, or maybe they're just maybe they're just groomed, you know, around the eye area in general, and they want that taken care of. Or maybe they're me because I get it done. So because mine are a little like scraggly right now. But like before Leverage, I went and I'm like, I had all these like weird eyebrows, and she goes, and she actually said that thing that's sort of great and insulting all at once. I said, I pointed at my eyebrows like, I got all this up here, and she goes, I know, I see it, I know exactly what to do. So it's like it was obviously horrible. It was like outwardly bad, but at the same time, she went, I know, and sure enough, she put like a like one of those 99-cent black combs in front of my eyebrows and took the clippers and went, hold on. Zzz, zzz. And then it looked fantastic.
I never know what to do with my eyebrows because, you know, ladies do the thing where you pluck the eyebrows and you shape the eyebrows. And I don't know what to do about that because it's like
your eyebrows are fine.
Yeah. I spent, you know, my formative years like plucking the hair from in between, so I didn't get the unibrow or anything. But every once in a while I'll become obsessed with eyebrows, and I'll watch actresses on TV and people in magazines, and I'll just start looking at women's eyebrows and trying to figure out what they do with their eyebrows.
Now, are your eyebrows – is there something unnatural about them? In other words, right now,
no,
is this as they naturally appear right now?
At this point, this is how they naturally are.
There's nothing wrong with your eyebrows.
You know, I did pluck the places where there shouldn't be hair for years, and now no hair will grow
there's
there
just
anymore.
No,
but they aren't shaped or point. But I'm afraid that if I actually tried to do that, I'd have those creepy artificial looking eyebrows.
Here's the thing. Here's a little thing that that women don't know. That guys don't like that. Guys, you know, unless you're some Jersey Shore douche. Guys typically don't like women who have overly shaped eyebrows because it just looks weird and creepy.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you get used to seeing, like actresses in movies and TV, and you see it in magazines. But if you see someone who's like that in real life,
it's weird.
It looks really bizarre.
Here's, by the way, something that no woman should ever, 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 ever do. Please, please, for the love of God, I speak on behalf of all men and probably most people, period. Do not do that thing where you shave your eyebrows off and then just paint them on.
No.
Why would you do that?
I don't know.
I sometimes want to just sort of – this is the one thing about reality television that I was talking earlier today about how I don't like reality TV. The one thing I do like is how they will sometimes on reality TV, like they'll ask the unaskable question that you can't ask in polite society. You know, like on What Not to Wear, where it's what's his name? Is that the Carson the – what's his name? No, Carson Kressley's the guy from Queer Eye. Who's the guy?
Yeah.
The guy on What Not to Wear, it's
I don't know. I hate those people on the American What Not to Wear, though.
Anyway.
Well, I like the women on the British
Clinton
one.
Clinton Kelly.
Yeah, I hate those guys.
Is that guy and the woman. I do like the fact, though, that they will just say, like, what were you think? Why would you ever wear this? What is wrong with you that you would think this looks good on you? Because that's what you – so like the women with the painted on eyebrows where it's not like they were – look, it's one thing if like you're in a fire or something and like, hey, they're not going to grow back. Yeah, you got to paint them on. What are you going to do? But if you're just some chick that, like, you know, it takes a break from putting on lip liner to, you know, to also paint on your eyebrows that you've shaved away, you look retarded.
Well, again,
there's just no getting around
those
it.
Are often the same women that either have the foundation makeup that doesn't actually match their skin, and then it just ends
at
the jawline.
At the jawline, yeah.
And or they do the thing where they have the lip liner that is, like, darker than the lipstick. That looks just really freakish and strange.
No, unless you're leaning against a lowrider somewhere, that is a thing that you're not going to be able to make work for you. That is I take it as a point of pride that even I, as a man, know how to apply makeup. You know, you do the movies or TV or whatever, and it's like the thing. It's all about blending. That's the thing. It's about blending, and then progressively less makeup as you get closer to like your throat or whatever. But like in high school, you'd see those chicks where they have like the makeup mask. And it looks like somebody has just stuck like a theater mask on them, but it's like a theater mask for like a hooker. Those are often the same girls, by the way, that would come back from lunch and they're missing all the makeup from like the top lip down because they were like humping some guy in the shrubs. And then they would just forget. They're like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe I'm going to look like I've only got half a face here. So
I'm sort of obsessed with all this stuff now, though, because, you know, I'm getting older now and there's that problem that women have where they tend to get stuck in doing their makeup the way they did it when they were 23. And then you get into middle age and, like, you're still doing that and you look kind of ridiculous. And also, I have this sort of – it's sort of a fear and also I'm sort of sure that this will happen, that I'm going to, like, end up one of those sort of Lucille Ball, Rosemarie kind of women that I'm just getting older but I'm painting my lips outside the
line.
And
no one will tell you.
And my hair is, like, this insane, unnatural color and I've got a bow on the side of my head and, like, and I just look like a freakish clown and no one is saying anything.
No, it's just Aunt Dawn. She's eccentric, you know? And you're going to be wrapping up Jell-O in bags and giving it to people for a present at Christmas. I think about it. Here's the thing about working in radio or working in entertainment, period, is that it lets you elongate and prolong your adolescence, like way, way past. Like, I realize that I act and behave and maybe sometimes dress in ways that most guys my age, not like I'm ancient, but I'm 37. And most guys were 37. You know, they don't look as like I look. I just mean that most guys, at a certain point, you stop dressing like you're auditioning for Aerosmith. And I hung onto that particular look way longer than I should have. And now I've just sort of got my poor man's Richard Belzer thing going on, and which is still sort of awesome. And I'm not even saying that the way I dress is inappropriate for my age. I know that a lot of guys, they dress like a typical, you know, like some suburban guy where you go to Sears and you just kind of buy whatever's on sale on the table and you stick it on and, you know, whatever, and it works. And, you know, and whatever works. There is that thing, though, where even working in radio or in media, I do wonder when I will pass the age where I am wearing something or dressing or, you know, my hair or something in some way where it just – where I look like a tool, where I look like one of those aging 65-year-old actors who's waiting tables somewhere – clutching a script with him that he's hoping to give to, like, Martin Scorsese when he comes in for a gin and tonic or something. You know, and it's the guys with, the bad rug and the dye job and the, you know, and the
when
Botox.
When you're Chris Gore, who was the hot young writer and editor of, like, Premier Magazine
right.
in the early 80s, and now you see him on G4, and he's still trying to be the
yeah.
hot young guy, and you're going, dude, you're 50.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it no.
I mean, that's so. I'm trying to pick
stop
out.
Stop acting 21.
And that, and see, and that, and so I like to think that I am maybe not dressing my age as such, but that I am dressing in a way that at least doesn't make me look flat out like freaking absurd, you know. And but who's to say? But again, I rely on people to actually tell me when that happens because how do I know? So my whole thing is I figured it out. The key is to find somebody you can model yourself after. That is older than you. So they are always at that age before you. So you can be like, how do they dress? Oh, that's how you do it. And the thing I figured out to know when somebody – it's the most obvious answer ever. Using the dual role models of Richard Belzer and George Carlin, who the one thing that didn't work with that guy for a long time that somebody finally told him, and it's when his wife died and he got a younger girlfriend. And his girlfriend told him to cut the ponytail. She said, you're bald. Lose the ponytail. And he's like, really? All right. And he cut it off. And then it was perfect because he and Belzer do the same thing where it's the well-tailored, well-fitted black outfit.
Yeah.
It's black head to toe, but it can't just be like off a rack. Like you got to make it – the clothes themselves have to be sort of appropriate for the occasion. But just the solid black. And if you have the right kind of clothing and it's black, that will work at any age, no matter who you are. Tall, short, black, white, fat, thin, doesn't matter. That's my whole thing.
I was thinking next year I might just start letting all the gray grow into my hair and change up my clothing style and start going for kind of a dignified Helen Mirren sort of thing and start easing into middle age gracefully.
See, but it doesn't seem like I can comment on that, though, because I can't. So you don't look like Helen Mirren, because then maybe if you want to,
no.
then it's
no,
an insult.
No, I don't. I don't actually look anything like Helen Mirren. I'm just
saying.
You know
saying, what I'm saying.
I just, you know, you have to have a role model. You have to say, who actually looks age appropriate but tasteful?
Yeah.
You know? And doesn't look like some kind of like frumpy soccer mom or like, you know, she's Goldie Hawn or something and is trying to pretend that she's still, you know.
See, that's the disadvantage to being the sexpot is that being the sexpot is like being the lead singer in a band. I've often thought about, is it better to be the lead singer or the lead guitar player? Because you figure if the band splits up, if you're the lead singer, okay, you got like a name recognition. People know who you are and you're identifiable because of the voice. So you can go get gigs as like Sebastian Bach or somebody, Janie Lane, just going and singing those songs forever because you're the voice of the song. But then you're also like tied to that.
Yeah.
If you're the guitar player, you don't have name recognition, but you could also like join another band and not, you know, you can get work anywhere. So it's like, well, is it better to be, you know, the hot chick or to be the whatever chick? If you're Goldie Hawn, I mean, and I love Goldie Hawn, but I mean, stop.
No,
stop,
but there's this thing that people go, wow, look at Goldie Hawn. She looks great for her age. And you go, you know, if she was like a woman who lived like three houses down from you in your neighborhood and dressed like that, you would say, wow, she's crazy.
That's pathetic.
That's pathetic and crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. She looks like, like she's at a flapjack house trying to compete with the younger waitresses for tip money.
Yeah.
So, no, I am not with that, as they say. All right. Well, you will tell me if I ever start to look just ridiculous, right?
I will. And I'm hoping you will take the place. Like my best friend and I promised each other that if we started to become like the crazy middle-aged ladies with the red lipstick outside of the lines.
Yeah.
And,
you
have to tell somebody.
You know, and I, you know, so that's, you know, because we have to. You're very stylish, though. You have a sense of. Here's the thing. Here's the deal about you is that. And then we'll kind of wrap up this because you got to skedaddle. But you have to skedaddle. I kind of made that into one syllable there.
I do.
You at least know. Pardon the pun, what not to wear, though. Like, you know, it's like Janine Garofalo, of all people, said something really smart one time. She said that back when she was funny and smart and so forth, and when she was alive, I guess. I don't even know where she went. Is she in a camp somewhere being re-educated?
She's still doing – I saw her recently doing something. I think she's trying to like scale back the crazy political stuff and resurrect her career
a
little bit.
Too late. And whatever you could do, Janine Garofalo, Margaret Cho is doing better. It's just you give it up. That's a future crazy cat lady just waiting to happen, Janine Garofalo. Yeah. You know, just like doing everything underneath the door for the next, you know, 10 years. But she said this thing. She said that she didn't think she was the best comedian ever. She said she didn't think she was the funniest person on earth, but at least she knew what a hack was. And so she could not be that. She could avoid being a hack because she could identify the signs of hackdom. You know how not to dress, at least at this point. So unless you just go batty at some point, which is always possible, at least you know what outfits not to be wearing around.
There are certain things that I avoid, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, and the end. Well, let's do one more story that you pick at random from a pile of things that we have not done yet. And then we'll end this charade.
Okay, this was random.
Oh, and then I got to read the email from the woman who said we solved her problem. I could actually do that in the stead of this if you would like, because I know you're behind schedule here.
And also while you're digging that out, say again happy anniversary to Paul Van Woudenberg and his lovely wife Jennifer, who have been married for 3 years.
Indeed,
longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show.
And happy anniversary to you and. Many more and all that. And I will also say, just as one bit of business, don't forget, you can find out more about this at rickemerson.com, but the Emerson Grant is happening right now. What is the Emerson Grant? We talk about this a lot during Legion of News because those folks are, you know, maybe they're not subscribing to the show. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't know from Emerson. Maybe they're all just there to listen to Dawn, or they just like the sounds of teletypes. I don't know. But we are giving away 10 subscriptions every month to this very fine radio program. Here's how you do it. If you are already a subscriber, you can still win one for somebody else. If you know somebody who needs to know the glory of this program, you make a YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length explaining why someone you know should receive a free month subscription to the unbridled glory that is the Emerson Rick Emerson Show. You send the link for that YouTube video to video@rickemerson.com. And I'm going to do 10 of those a month, and that, of course, is made possible by our friends at New Millennium Maintenance for landscaping maintenance or nuisance abatement solutions for your home or neighborhood. All right, so I'm just going to read this. Let's see if I have some sort of a music bed with which to. I'll just use our dramatic. This is the first and probably last installment of The Rick Emerson Show Makes Your Life Better in Ways You Can't Even Imagine. This is from Erica. Rick, you, good sir, and I guess Dawn by association, have solved a puzzle that has been plaguing me for over 20 years. Doesn't even seem possible. It didn't seem like a thing that this little old radio program ought to be able to do, and yet we have actually reached out and touched someone and improved their lives in a manner that they didn't think was ever going to be achieved.
Well, of course we have. Of course we've done that.
Erica continues, Rick, in 1987, my teacher read the Tripod book trilogy to my fifth grade class. I fell in love with those books and read them again over the summer break. Somewhere between the start of sixth grade and discovering Tolkien, I forgot about that beloved trilogy. Over the years, I've described vague recollections of giant machines and mesh caps and mind control to others in the hopes of finding someone who had read the books. I had all but given up. That is until you, Rick Emerson, mentioned reading the White Mountain series on a show with Dan Hanico from Powell's Books. That sparked a memory from my feeble adolescent brain. I immediately inhaled an enormous gasp, did a quick search on Amazon, and was vindicated. I can't thank you enough, says Erica. Sincerely, from one geek to another, thank you. Best show ever. There you go. All right, let's hear it for
Erica.
Me. And by the way, and I will, and just because your letter was, really because your letter really did everything but just hail me as a living God, I will overlook the fact that you went to search on Amazon and not Powell's.
And you know, since she enjoys books so much, you should send her a book from our giant pile of prizes that we have never given away.
You know, those are sitting there, and it's a thing that I look at when I come into the studio in the morning. I gotta give those away, and then it's like I'm distracted by sort of, ooh, look, keys, you know, and then I just forget.
Obsessing over where your sunglasses went.
You know, I almost called you, too, to be like, hey, but here's the reason I didn't, as you're packing up, let me just say this. The reason I didn't call you yesterday to say, do you have my sunglasses, is because I knew that if you didn't, that I would feel like an ass, and that you would go, why would you think I had your sunglasses? And then it would be brought up again at some future point when we were arguing about something. And you go, like, is this beginning to accuse me of stealing your sunglasses? And then, in fact, you had inadvertently stolen my sunglasses.
Right. And oddly, I didn't realize it because apparently I picked them up, stuck them in my bag, and when I reached into my bag to get them,
they were right next
I actually pulled my sunglasses out and never noticed they were there.
It doesn't really matter. I bought these for like $7 at Fred Meyer. These really are purely functional. They're just to get the sun out of my eyes when I have my contact lenses in. I don't need them.
I got these at Plaid Pantry.
Really?
Well, yeah, because my good ones, my Gants, Greg stepped on and destroyed. So I need.
How much did those cost, the ones that Greg destroyed?
About $20.
Oh, my God. Did you see Greg's leg?
Yes.
Greg?
He got bit by some kind of a spider, and he's been picking at it, and now it's all red and inflamed, and it now has some kind of blood poisoning.
Can we just
see the red moving away from it?
Words that everybody should learn. Don't pick at that thing.
Yeah.
Greg or anybody. Yeah, his big black circle, and he's just dripping goo everywhere. Mm. All right. Well, on that note, all right, we'll just.
This is why I never go outdoors.
No, you stay inside. I mean, there's enough things to kill you inside. You need to go outside where the rest of them are kept. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. We want to thank our guest Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Wednesday, August 25th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, a brief musical interlude, after which we have an encore of Legion of News and today's Rick Emerson Show that you're listening to right now. It encores until tomorrow at noon. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.